Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classic Gaming Brothers. I'm Zach.
And I'm Seth.
And we are the Classic Gaming Brothers.
That's right, we are the Classic Gaming Brothers.
Always classic, sometimes classy.
Oh man, so let's chat a little bit about what's going on. So we, Zach and I, live in the New England area, as we've talked about before, and on March 21st there's going to be PAX, so Zach and I will be going to the PAX. So we're going to talk about that after we talk about what we've been recently been playing. But we do have a surprise, and that surprise is about finding us. If you can find the Classic Gaming Brothers on PAX, we will tell you that if you're listening to this episode and you go to PAX on Friday or Thursday, you will not find the Classic Gaming Brothers.
Oh no, if you do find us, those are imposters or doppelgangers and they must be destroyed.
Or you're at the bar.
Or you're at the bar, yeah.
We will be at PAX on Saturday and Sunday. So we're going to talk more about PAX, as this is our pre-PAX pod episode, or we like to call in the industry the PPP. And but before that, Zach.
Yes, Seth.
What have you been recently been playing?
Seth, recently I've been playing Twin Peaks Into the Night.
Based on the show?
It is based on the show. It's an itch.io demo developed by Blue Rose Team, and it is in fact based on the TV show Twin Peaks, and it's designed to look and feel like a PS1 survival horror game. It's kind of part of a series of games that are on itch.io, all by different developers, called Haunted PS1, which are these PS1 style games. They're not necessarily PS1 games, they don't run in an emulator, they're usually built in Unity, but they have, you know, PS1 style graphics and are often stylized to be PS1 gameplay style, so you're limited to the controls that a PS1 would have. Now, Twin Peaks Into the Night is kind of designed to be a what if scenario of what if a Twin Peaks game was put out on the PS1, and it does a pretty good job at this. It actually is fun. When you start the game, it gives you a summary kind of Twin Peaks as a like game based on a property would, but it's done in this like very compressed video style because it's supposed to be on a PS1, so all of the video is like full of artifacts and like the audio is kind of distorted a bit, so it does a good job feeling like of the era. The game is a pretty short demo. It covers pretty much the opening part of the show up to like almost like just the first episode, barely the first episode. You play as FBI agent Dale Cooper, who has just arrived in the small sleepy town of Twin Peaks to investigate the attack on two girls that left one of them, Laura Palmer, dead. And after examining the body alongside Sheriff Harry S. Truman, you slip into the Black Lodge, a dimensional anomaly that exists within Twin Peaks, and you learn that the world around you is not as it seems. It's a creepy, fun little demo, and I look forward to seeing more of what the team puts out.
Cool.
It is cool. I like Twin Peaks. It's a great show. It's a show that I think very much feels like it should have gotten a PS1 style game just because of how weird it is. One of my favorite details is the team that are working on it are planning to implement a mechanic where to save your game, you walk over to a table and you drink a cup of coffee. And a clip from Dale says,
"Damn good coffee and hot."
That's a Twin Peaks reference, right?
Yeah, he loves coffee.
I've never actually watched a single episode of Twin Peaks.
It's weird. I would recommend watching it. I would say the first season is strange. The second season is a little stranger, but also kind of bad. And the revival is bizarre.
Is it like Black Mirror strange?
No, it's very melodramatic. And it has elements of world bending strangeness. To give you an example, a lot of the times people speak almost like they're talking in riddles.
So like Twilight Zone strange?
It's kind of like if one episode of the Twilight Zone took place over the course of an entire show.
I got you. Instead of Twilight Zone having different worlds in the different episodes, it was the same world in multiple episodes.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Yeah. Anyway, Seth, what have you been recently playing?
Recently, I've been playing a game that's being developed by Alex Blintsov called Furnish Master. It came out in Early Access February 19th of this year, 2024. It's a relaxing game about furnishing apartments and houses and commercial real estate and moving things around in a building. It's fun. It's kind of like Unpacking, except Unpacking is a 2D isometric game, and this is a 3D game. So I'm playing the story, and the story is, it's in early access, so the story's not fully fleshed out, as in, like, they don't have all the missions in. But, like, for example, the first thing that I had to do was clean up after a party while somebody else was cleaning up a different room, but I still got paid for doing it. So I don't know if I was the maid or if the roommate felt bad or if I found some money under a couch. I don't know why I got paid, but I did clean up the party. And you have to move furniture around, pick up and throw away trash. The true part of the game, though, is where you go and you get brought into furnished people's places. And for example, I'm furnishing a kitchen. And so the game gives me a little room that's where the kitchen is. And it's completely empty. And it gives me all of the objects. And the only requirement to beat the level is to put all of the objects into that room. However, you don't have to really have any sort of real design ability as long as it's all in that room. So if you wanted to have, say, I don't know, a jug of milk on the table instead of in the refrigerator, you could do that. Or if you just wanted to put on the floor, you could do that too. If you wanted to mount the refrigerator so that it was flying and like attached to a higher portion of the wall, you could do that as long as it's in the room. You can also paint it. So if you wanted to paint every single item red and the walls and just have an entire room that's just red with red furniture, you can turn that over and do that. What's cool is it gives you objects like milk and glasses and coffee makers and stuff like that. And it gives you cabinets and refrigerators. And you actually have to manually open the items and put items away where they should go, which is kind of fun. There's no time limit. There's no real penalty for doing something bad. It just says, just do these things. And then when you're done, you get paid. And then you move on to the next puzzle. So it's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed Unpacking. I thought that was a fun game. I feel like Furnished Master is, it's different fun. I liked Unpacking because Unpacking also told a story at the same time. The story was told through the game, like through the actual gameplay. And you like uncovered the story. It was like a kind of like a fake smart unveiling of the story. Like, you got to learn about the story as you played Unpacking, but it wasn't like spoon fed to you, but it wasn't also like you didn't like read dialogue telling you about the story. It was just like you uncovered things as you kind of followed this person as they unpacked and moved into different areas. Furnished Master is a bit more direct in regards to like people being like, come to my house and move my furniture around. It's not like you are like maybe moving into a guy for the first time's apartment or something like that, which is what Unpacking kind of goes over. But it's got that similar type of mechanic, as it were. And so I've been enjoying Furnished Master. I actually watched Many a True Nerd, who is one of the YouTubers that I watch randomly. I don't watch him consistently, but I watched, he did a Crusader Kings 3 playthrough or 2 playthrough that I watched and I loved. And he occasionally gets demo keys and he plays them. Furnished Master was one of them, and I was watching him play and I was like, oh, that seems like a fun game.
Nice. Well, that is a nice segue into our topic for today, which is our pre-PAX pod, where we're going to be going over some of the things that we're excited to see at PAX East. So we're basing this off of the expo list, which at the time of recording is mostly what appears to be complete, but they haven't finalized the map yet, which means they're probably going to be adding and possibly even taking away people off of this list. But we went through this to see the ones that we think are booths that we're planning to stop by or at least keep an eye out for, and just ones that kind of appealed to our interests.
Yeah. So we're going to do a post-PAX pod where we will talk about our actual PAX experience. We'll include interviews from the people who we meet on the floor that Zach shoves his mic in front of. And what I think we'll do is we'll try to go to these booths and we will come back to you guys and say, hey, this is what we thought we were going to see. And this is what we actually saw. And how departed is that from our hype? And did our hype carry through? Or were we, I don't think we've ever really ragged on anybody, but you know, sometimes people don't meet expectations.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to get right into it. Seth, I want you to lead us off.
Yeah, I'll start us off here. So right off the bat, the way that PAX puts up their expo list is that they have some featured booths, which I don't know if they've done in the past. These are the booths that, regardless of being in alphabetical order, are at the top. So I don't know if they paid extra to be there or if PAX decided that they should be there for fun.
Oh, I assume they're just the ones that get like big booths.
They could be. Or I didn't know if they just also paid to be featured.
Probably a combination.
Maybe a benefit of getting a big booth is that you are featured. Like you, if you're like, hey, if you're spending whatever the cost of a big booth, I don't know what a big booth cost is.
If you want a 10x10 booth in the backside wall, the base cost will be about 1,000. If you need power, add 400. If you need Wi-Fi, 200. If you need a loading dock, 500. If you need more than two people, both those people have to have badges. So the total is probably ends up being about 4,000.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk to the audience. I think we've had some other PAX episodes. We've talked a lot about it. It's a big convention for us. Zach and I usually get a lot of guests out of it. We have a lot of fun. We actually have a surprise. We're actually going to be going to another convention later this year, so we'll talk about that one as well. Not in this episode, we'll talk about it when it's relevant. But if you put it in your picture of your mind eye before we get into like the booth that we want to see, the picture coming down into like a large pit as it were, and in that pit it just goes on for many feet. Because it's the Boston Convention Center is actually built over the ocean, which is kind of the bay, but it's actually built over the water, which is kind of cool. So there is a portion when you're standing far enough out in the BCEC or the Boston Convention Expo Center where you are actually standing above water. And I always think that's pretty cool. It feels like concrete because that's what it is. You are physically above water at some point in time because the location is so large. It's also in the seaport, which is a very congested area of the city, so the only place to build is out into the ocean, especially for a large building like that. So you go down into the pit, and there's in the front half of the room, there is a lot of big booths, and you'll see some really big companies. Usually Gigabyte usually has a big booth. I think they're coming back again this year. Corsairs will have usually a big booth, and Nintendo's had a big one. Sony's had a big one. Square has had a big one. So a lot of really like AAA publishers or large companies like that are like either manufacturers for accessories or something, like big manufacturers of accessories, usually have the big booths. And these booths are, when I say they're big, I mean Zach saying the small booth is 10x10. These big booths are probably like I want to say like what, maybe 100x50 or something like that, or maybe a little less than that, maybe like they're large. They're very big. Then there is on either side of these collection of big booths, there are small booths, and there's what I refer to as like the hallway, and you have like small booths on either side, and you walk this entire like around the big booths through these hallways. Then there's like a smaller collection of booths. There's usually an independent area where there's like they set aside space for smaller games to go, and there'll be like independent games, and there'll be smaller booths, but like a little town of smaller booths. They may have some showing from Australia. I've seen that happen before. They may sometimes have like a mega booth where even smaller independent games will be all together, and they'll share like they'll just have like a TV on like it'll be like one game is on one side of the TV and another game is on another side of the TV. That's for like developers and game people who really can't even afford the $1,000 to get a booth. They will get their TV. And to be honest, if you could get into that booth with the TVs, the mega booth, probably better traffic. It's a better location. You definitely have better traffic, and your game will probably get seen more than the smaller booths against the wall. And then half the floor is usually relegated to board games and tabletops, and a place where there's an arena so you can watch like esports. There was a wrestling ring one year, but there's just a pile of stuff. Zach and I have seen PAX in a number of different states. We've seen some pretty large PAXes, and we've also seen some pretty small PAXes. And last year was actually pretty good. I think that last year was kind of getting back to where it was before COVID. The one immediately after COVID was very small, and the one immediately before COVID, like the one like weeks before COVID, was very large. But so it's very interesting watching them kind of navigate their way out of this pandemic, really going into a post-pandemic world, because they are a location where there are a number of people that go to it. So some of the booths that I'm specifically interested in seeing, Larian's going to be showing up. So Larian did the Divinity series, and of course Baldur's Gate 3. Since Baldur's Gate 3 has been out for quite a bit of time now, now, roughly about 6 months or so. I think it came out officially in August of last year, 2023. I'm really interested in seeing what they're going to be showing off, because they have shown off Baldur's Gate 3 for the last couple of PAXs. So are they going to show off Baldur's Gate 3 again? I'm curious about what they're going to show off and if it's just going to be a booth for Baldur's Gate 3. I say just going to be a booth, but honestly, especially because they're a sponsor, like they're a featured booth, that means they're spending a lot of money on a featured booth location. What are they showing off? Because everyone knows about Baldur's Gate 3. What benefit do they have by going to this convention? And like, I'm curious to see what their strategy is going into this. Maybe it's because I think Baldur's Gate 3 is coming out on a console that it hasn't been out on before, so maybe that may be what they're doing and gonna show off. So maybe they'll have Xboxes or whatever console that Baldur's Gate 3 is not on. So that'll be interesting. I'm interested to go to see them, not necessarily because I need to see Baldur's Gate 3 stuff, though if they have some cool merch, I'll probably buy it. But I'm really interested in seeing what their like strategy is and like what are they planning on doing there. Something completely different that I'm also interested in seeing is a company called Corgi Cozy Hike. It's a therapeutic open world adventure game where you sploot, as they say, around and teach people to live and love like a dog. There is going to be a tiny team at their booth, and apparently their booth is going to be at the corner of Corgi Street and Rescue Lane. So there's going to be Corgi butt pins that they're having and an exclusive demo, and I hope some sort of dogs, but I doubt it. But it'd be cool if they actually have dogs. I'm interested in going to them and talking about them because I think it's an interesting concept, and I think that like therapeutic gaming is an interesting thing to at least mention. I'm also interested in seeing Berserk Studio. The reason why I'm interested in seeing Berserk Studio is because they say that it's going to be the loudest game on the floor or the goriest game on the floor. And they say you can play either or, whichever tickles your fancy, I guess. So I believe they are demoing their music games Just Shapes and Beats, which is a co-op musical bullet hell game based on Shapes, or Infernix, which is a platforming open world side-scrolling game where you play as a knight and you fight devil things. The vibe gave me a little bit like Ghost and Goblins vibe. I want to go to that booth mostly to see if they are in fact the loudest or goriest.
I'd be interested in that too.
Good. Maybe we can play a game because it's a co-op. They said bring a friend or three. Perhaps we will bring three Ryans and have the Ryans battle it out.
We are going with multiple people all named Ryan.
That's right. The only people that are escorting us are people named Ryan, because the classic gaming brothers only travel in groups of Ryans.
That's true.
Even though neither of us, as according to our episode, are named Ryan.
Right. Yeah. No. Well, but we found out that having Ryans in many numbers allows you to be protected. Now, a company that I'm interested in is DreadXP. They're an independent game publisher that they do horror games. DreadXP has put out a lot of interesting games that I am always interested in playing, and I don't think I've actually owned any of them.
What have they done?
They did the My Friendly Neighborhood horror game, which we saw last year. They did Mortuary Assistant.
Is Mortuary Assistant out?
Yes, it is. It is out. It is $25. DreadXP, I should clarify, they're a publisher. They don't make these games. They publish these games. Your mileage may vary with them. One game that I found that they put out last year, and I've never heard of it, but I really want to play this game now, is called Red Tape. And it's a first-person adventure game where you go through the 9 layers of hell in a corporate setting.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's... explore the 9 levels of corporate hell as you work to clear your name with the devil. It just looks fun. It's got this like paper doll first person aesthetic. DreadXP, they put out a lot of cool type of horror games, a lot of indie horror games, a lot of stuff that's like My Friendly Neighborhood in the sense that it might be appealing to people who don't just want like blood and gore. Like, for example, they did a text adventure called I Doesn't Exist, a modern text adventure, which is described as Zork meets an existential crisis. So I like those style of horror games. I like horror games that kind of have more of a psychological element to them. So I'm curious to see what DreadXP has to offer on hand at PAX. I'm curious to see what they're bringing. Now, another game company that I'm looking forward to seeing is Funcom. Funcom is specifically working on Dune Awakening, the open world survival MMO Dune game that's coming out. I love Dune. I actually just saw Dune Part 2 a few days ago. So I'm in a Dune frenzy, so to speak, in terms of my emotions about Dune, but I'm very curious to see how they can do an open world survival MMO set in the Dune universe. course, and I definitely want to get my hands on the demo if they have it there, or if they have any gameplay footage, I'd love to see it. It is like the game that they are promoting on the PAX website, like in terms of like their booth listing, so I hope they'll have something. And yeah, it should be cool. It'll be fun to play as a Fremen and fight against the Harkonnens. And another booth that I'm looking forward to seeing is one that we saw last year, and that's Retrotainment. So Retrotainment is a developer slash publisher of 8-bit NES games on physical hardware. So they put out a game, Full Quiet, which was a kind of horror game that was released on the NES that I picked up a cartridge for. They also put out the Haunted Halloween games, which I have physical copies of. And they work with 8-Bit Legit, who have recently put out Dead Tomb and Project Blue. I know last year, 8-Bit Legit and Retrotainment shared booths, so this year they might be sharing a booth again. Who knows? I know we met Tim from 8-Bit Legit, so it'd be fun to hopefully bump into Tim and talk retro games and homebrews and stuff like that. Retrotainment puts out some quality stuff, so it'll be cool to see what they have on the floor.
And speaking about companies that begin with the letter R and have retro in them, I'm excited to see Retroware again. The games that they're going to be showing off this year are going to be Iron Meat, The Transylvania Adventure of Simon Quest, Prison City, Love 3, The Angry Video Game Nerd 1 Plus 2 Deluxe, Eagle Island Twist, and Toxic Crusaders. Apparently, Retroware also runs arcades near Philadelphia.
Do you know what else they run? They run too many games. That's their convention, so...
So we'll be seeing them soon, and maybe we'll play some of their arcades in the Philadelphia area, because we will, spoiler alert, we're going to be going to too many games. So they're going to be a kind of a retro experience with modern convenience, and I think Toxic Crusaders is still coming out, so it hasn't been released yet. I played it with some random person because they had a singles line. It's just like a theme park, and I proceeded to the front of the line to play with this random dude because I think the other line was to meet the Angry Video Game Nerd or something. I don't know. I was like, I just want to play the game, and I liked it, with the caveat that it felt very much like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge. It's very similar and plays very similar to Shredder's Revenge, except I believe in Toxic Crusaders, the arcade game, you can throw anything, including your companions, which is something that you could do in the beat-em-up game for the Sega Genesis. So I think it's fun that you could do that in Toxic Crusader. I'm looking forward to playing it again to see if they've done anything different from when I last played it, because I haven't really watched their development. So it'll be interesting to just kind of go up and start playing it again and think back to my memories, as shoddy as they are, and think about what my experience was like playing it before. There's also going to be the Transylvania Adventure of Simon Quest, or TASQ, which is a parody homage platformer set in a dark 8-bit world, and where rival Stan Helsing robbed Simon of fame by killing Count Dracula first. So you have to reclaim your glory by resurrecting Dracula piece by piece and then slaying him yourself, which sounds fun and also sounds like it's going to be somewhat of a Metroidvania type game.
Inti Creates is also supposed to be there. Inti Creates was originally founded in 1996, and they had a long run of putting out games for the PlayStation and a Wii and Nintendo DS, and they developed a lot of Mega Man games. They actually created Mega Man 9, which was the kind of return to form 8-bit game, and in more recent years they created Mighty Number 9, which was the not so return to form Mega Man game. Reportedly they're going to be selling some of their exclusive games from Japan, so that's going to be kind of cool to see. I don't know, it's just going to be kind of neat to run into them. They usually have a booth there, so I've definitely stopped by before, and picking up games that are like exclusive to Japan is always kind of cool.
So Zach and I go to the back half of PAX, which is Saturday and Sundays. We won't be there Thursday or Friday. So if there's anything that's truly like unique and hard to get, generally we will miss out. However, usually vendors do put aside stock for every day. So if they have a promoted material or something, as long as you get to their booth early that day that you are going, as soon as the dealer booths open on Saturday and you go down, usually you can get whatever promoted materials there are. Obviously, that's not the case when it comes to stores that have limited products, perhaps, like if you're looking for a copy of, what did we see, like Earthbound at one point in time, we saw a copy of Mother. If Zach wanted it, and there was another Zach that wanted it, then you'd have to go early to get it. But it be that as it may, usually we're able to find the stuff that we want. I actually really like going to PAX with Zach. I've gone to PAX without Zach. I've gone to PAX with Zach. Sometimes I go to PAX without Zach and then go with him later. But I like going with him because he's very good at shopping for retro games. I like watching him and trying to find things. Since I'm not really a physical collector, I generally don't have a reason to look through those things. So I think it's fun to just go shopping with him and find stuff. And I found some things that I have purchased or said that's a ridiculous price, because sometimes I think part of the fun is just judging how people price their video games, especially at a convention, because conventions generally do not draw good prices. Another booth that I'm interested in going to is Camden Games, which is from the UK. And they're bringing two new arcade-inspired games to PAX East, Shape Invaders and Asteroid Dice. Shape Invaders is a retro-themed flicking game for two players who are battling to be the last mothership standing. Play with an arena to fit any table or on a portable gaming tabletop. Just set out your formation, then aim and flick your pieces and try to eliminate the enemy. Each player has a mothership, shields, and fighters, and you can flick your mothership and fighters at the opponent pieces to knock them off the table. I hope it doesn't hurt your flicking finger. Any fighters or shields knocked off the table are out and cannot be used again. If your mothership is knocked off, you can swap it for a shield piece on the table for an extra life, but if you're out of shields, your mothership is lost and your opponent wins the game. We could try this game out before they launch their Kickstarter.
It's a fun looking game. It's got like nice colorful pieces and stuff like that.
Nice. They're also doing Asteroid Dice, which they successfully launched on Kickstarter, and they're doing the arcade game edition with colorful dice, and so they're going to have that available, the exclusive game edition and Fireball expansion pack, all at their booth. They'll also have squishy dice sets in gold and a bunch of merch. So there's going to be a giant pink stand, and we'll play their arcade inspired games, and we'll either have a lot of fun or we won't talk about them ever again, because our mom said if we don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's not specifically setting Camden Games aside, that's for everybody. If we don't mention them again, we probably don't have good opinions about them. Anyway, Chaotix LLC, I'm also interested in seeing. So Chaotix is a company that is having a combination of a beat 'em up and arena fighter, and the developer who developed it was a med student who became a developer and always dreamed about releasing a video game, and then his wife signed him up for PAX. So he's got some passion projects that are in development, including a frantic 4-player arena fighting game which has both versus and co-op arcade modes. So interesting guy. Maybe we'll run into them and chat with them, and maybe they may be a good candidate to talk about their stuff that they're working on our Indie Dev Lounge.
Apogee is going to be there. Now, Apogee Games, of course, is the company that is behind Duke Nukem, Max Payne, Commander Keen, Rise of the Triad, and Prey. And at PAX, they are bringing new games. They have Turbo Overkill, Bread and Fred. I know last year they were showing off Rise of the Triad Ludicrous Edition, which is the like remaster of Rise of the Triad, which I still need to pick up. I love Rise of the Triad. It's a very silly game. So I'm looking to see what they have on their thing. It said, say hello to the developers who are behind your up and coming game. So it'd be cool to actually maybe talk to some of the devs of Apogee products and maybe even get a little bit of audio recording from them.
I was interested in their game Little Lands. That's going to be, I guess they're going to be showing as well. The intro has a ZZT game where the person who's in the game playing it, and it looks like that it's like an explorer type game.
Little Lands does look cute. It's like a combination of like Stardew Valley meets almost Tunic with some of the adventure stuff.
Yeah, or like Animal Crossing or something.
Well, way more adventure stuff than like Animal Crossing. Like they're you blowing up walls and things.
So yeah, so Stardew Valley and
a little bit of Zelda. Wizardum was another game that they're putting out, which is like almost reminds me of Heretic. It's like a FPS but with magic stuff. So your guy has like a staff that shoots like laser, shoots like lightning.
But like a boomer shooter?
Yeah, like a boomer shooter, but with more of a fantasy element behind it.
Neat.
Well, Seth, do you want to take us over to Europe real quick?
Yeah, I will take us over to Europe. Poland has a national program which sponsors and helps prop up game developers and gives grants to game developers to develop games for global release. So Poland's very into game development. They want to be a hub for game development, and they want their people to be game developers. And so because of that, they have a program that allows them to do that. Also because of that, they usually have a booth at PAX from Poland. And as in, the government Poland bought a booth at PAX, which I think is fun. I'm guessing there's some sign-up process in Poland to be at the booth in PAX in Poland, and you have to probably show the people who are in the government your game and be like, this is the game I want to show at PAX, and then they'll send you out. And they are fun. They're a good group of people. They usually have some interesting games and some games that I have bought and enjoyed from them. They're just a fun group. We actually have an interview with one of them in our previous PAX episode. Zach does all the interviewing because I usually play the game and I don't like talking to people.
That's true.
So there's some of the games that they're going to be there. There is Be My Horde, which is going to be done by Polished Games. And in Be My Horde, you assume the role of Morgiana, a necromancer engaged in battles against armies of knights and paladins, commanding her horde of undead soldiers in this top-down, reverse bullet hell experience, where you slay your enemies, resurrect them, and use them to conquer the fantasy world, which sounds a lot of fun.
Yeah, it does sound a lot of fun. Now, another game that they have that will be at the booth is Plane Tiles, being developed by Mythic Owl. Plane Tiles is a cozy space city builder about crafting natural habitats on remote planets. Create a space haven, protect it from natural disasters, and evolve your world while completing challenging quests. Sounds a bit like a city builder style game, maybe combined with some RTS elements. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that has to offer.
They're also going to have Unbroken, being developed by MGP Studios. Unbroken is an action adventure hybrid, which could be best described as Bloodborne mixed with Super Hot doused in Tarantino sauce. So in it, you explore their vast and diverse realm with its own social structure as you pave your way to find the traitor Nielsen, featuring beefy in-your-face combat and combo systems synced in tune with the audio-visual composition, dynamic original OST, multiple endings, consequences and timeline systems, and Journey to Crest's Edge. The Journey to Crest's Edge is sure to be a memorable one. So yeah, it sounds like a fun, action-y, punchy game.
It does. It's something that I think would be cool to try out. I like those type of games. Now, they also have yet another fantasy title, or Yaft, by Atomic Wolf. In this game, you become a rogue in a fantasy action adventure game filled with absurd humor. Go on a quest to kill a dragon and realize that it's only the beginning. Always a fan of fantasy games, so it, you know, cool little title. I like the kind of tongue-in-cheek name. I think that's kind of fun.
There's going to be also Bot Crafter, which is being developed by Cosmic Dreams, where you construct, maintain, manage, and upgrade the fleet of your space robots in the sandbox crafter game. Build the base, gather the resources, and automate to succeed in your mission in the unique robot space sim, which sounds like Factorio in space, which will make me super happy because I like Factorio games.
Wand Project, WAND Project. It's step into a spell crafting roguelike battle in Tokyo, where spell customization is your lifeline. I don't know anything about this game, but it sounded like a cool idea. I think roguelikes are fun and spell crafting sounds interesting. So it's just one that caught my eye.
And finally, there is, finally for the Polish booth, there's Haunted House Renovator, which is being developed by Image Power SA, and you become a paranormal in Renovator, where you banish ghosts and restore haunted mansions to their former glory, which sounds like House Flipper if there were ghosts.
I saw that and I was like, that sounds like a game Seth wants.
It does sound like a game I want.
Now, beyond the Polish games booth, there's also many more booths that we want to see. Atari, for example, is going to be at PAX. Seth has said that they've been at PAX before, and I don't remember seeing them last time, but I believe him. I do know that Atari has recently gone through some, I don't want to say rebranding, but they've definitely like are re-embracing their like retro side with the release of the 2600 Plus and the Mini 400 computer. So I'm curious to see if they're going to have like any of that stuff on display or to try out, or if it's solely going to be Atari's, you know, game studio stuff. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they have to bring. They didn't have anything listed on their PAX page, so it's going to be a total surprise for Zach.
There's also Thermite Games, which is a Beijing-based publishing company comprised of industry veterans, founded in 2020, known as the publisher of The Bustling World, Teetopia, House of Legacy, Nobody, The Turnaround, Detained, Too Good for School, Tales of the Neon Sea, Corpse Keeper, and Lone Star, and Sophia the Traveler. But there's a lot of games that Thermite has worked on and published. I enjoy Tales of the Neon Sea, and I would be interested to see what other fun games that may be more unique coming out of Thermite Games.
They have some cool looking games. A lot of their games have a really nice aesthetic to them. Corpse Keeper in particular is like a 1v1 fighter that has this kind of fun, almost Bloodborne-esque design. And then they also have a game called A Guidebook to Babel, which is a kind of cutesy looking adventure game that apparently has kind of a butterfly effect element to it. So that's going to be cool. And then the last thing that we have listed here is not a developer. It's actually going to be a storefront, Dial Up Games. They say retro is their thing. They specialize in retro games and consoles, and they pride themselves in offering the cleanest, broadest, and best collection around. I am trying to remember if Dial Up Games is the one that I actually picked up the bootleg NBA Tournament Edition cartridge from. It might very well be, but I'm always interested in seeing what the retro game scene is at PAX. Again, it tends to not be the best of prices. A lot of people kind of upselling because there's only a few retro game vendors, but at the same time, it's going to be cool to check out and maybe pick up a couple of things. I'm not looking for anything particular. There is two games that I would love to get for a good deal. One, I think I might be able to get for a good deal if I really look, and maybe if I'm really lucky. And that is, I really want to pick up Warcraft Dark Saga for the PS1. It is Warcraft 2, but on the PS1. Also, if I could find a copy of Dune 2000 came out on the PS1. So if I can pick up that as well, that'd be great. Now, that will do it for our pre-PAX pod. There's, of course, many more game companies and developers and indie people that are going to be there. And we didn't even scrape into the physical games, really. I mean, we talked a bit about that one, Camden Games, but there's like a whole section of just tabletop stuff, which includes, RPGs and, figurines, dice, modules, everything that you can imagine. I'm definitely going to be doing a bit of exploring in that element, as well as that's some stuff that I've been gaining an interest in. So it's going to be a fun time. I'm looking forward to hanging out with my brother, going to bars, and chilling with Ryan's.
I mentioned this. There will be a surprise, and the surprise is if you find us, if you listen to the show and you find us at PAX, we will give you a prize if you find us and tell us that you listen to the show and that you're a fan of ours. We do not know what that prize is, but we will give you something. Be that as it may, if you are a fan of the show, listening to this show at PAX, and see us, we will give you a prize.
Well, let us get into our retro rewind. So, Seth had me play Alfred Chicken for the NES. It's an odd little platformer from Mindscape, released in 1993 for a variety of systems. I played the NES version. You control the titular Alfred, who is in fact a chicken. And you go around levels collecting gems, and you peck at balloons. In fact, you have to peck all the balloons in the level to advance to the next level. You can jump and do a little spinning attack, where you jump and you press down, and your character spins downward, and you use your beak to, attack enemies. The first level is set inside of a giant block of cheese, and you are fighting wind-up mice. It's a fun little game with cute graphics, and honestly, wasn't that bad. It was a bit repetitive, the music got a bit annoying, but overall, I liked it. It holds up nicely for what it is, and a fun fact I learned about it is that the product manager of the Amiga version of the game, named Carl Fitzhugh, stood in the 1993 Christchurch Dorset by-election as a member of the Alfred Chicken Party, and he received 18 votes. Next week, Seth, you can play Robo Warrior for the NES.
Thanks, Zach. Zach had me play Rise of the Robots for the Sega Genesis, which was released in February 1995 for the Sega Mega Drive. So thus, I didn't have to play a game because there was no game for the Sega Genesis. It was only for the Mega Drive and only had a European release. It was also, though, released throughout 94 and 95 for a number of different systems, including the PC, SNES, Philips CDI, 3DO Interactive Multiplayer, and Game Gear, none of which are the Sega Genesis. I took Zach's hint and played the Mega Drive version since it's pretty much the Sega Genesis, just for the European market. The game, which was developed by Mirage and published by Time Warner Interactive, was also developed by published by Acclaim and Absolute Entertainment. You play as a cyborg named EC352 Cyborg, and you attempt to stop the worst villain of all time, the Supervisor. That's his name. Which is honestly, the Supervisor, pretty scary as a concept. The game has some decent graphics for the time and was supposed to have the best AI around, but an overabundance of graphics and AI caused this to have a lot of bad gameplay. In the end, you could just fly and kick everyone and beat them in the game, which is fun until it is not fun because all you're doing is flying kicking people. I think the best review of this game is Next Generation reviewed and said, in the end, Rise of the Robots is just another forgettable Me Too brawler. So if you want to have a forgettable experience, then you can play this game. However, if you don't want to go on a brawler bender, you should check out something else. Now, next week, Zach, you can play Silent Steel, one of my all-time faves.
Okay, I will. Thank you, everyone, for listening to our pre-PAX pod. We hope to see you next week at PAX, and who knows, maybe you'll win a prize. That being said, if you have any questions for the Classic Gaming Brothers, you can email us at classicgamingbrothers@gmail.com. We're available wherever podcasts can be found, such as Podbean or iTunes. You can also find us on Facebook, Classic Gaming Brothers, Instagram, Classic Gaming Brothers, X, CG Brothers Pod, Blue Sky, CG Brothers Pod, and we're on Threads. With that being said, I think I've covered everything, but Seth, am I forgetting anything?
Don't play games like my brother.
And don't play games like my brother.
I've been Seth.
And I've been Zach.
And we've been the Classic Gaming Brothers.
That's
right.
That's right.